This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us. We have a great show lined up today, and Tom Schroyer and Susan Rode in studio today. So we have co-hosts on the program today. Good to see you, Tom and Susan.
Nice to be here, Steve. You'll notice I'm a little paler than Tom is at the moment.
Yes, that's right. How was the break?
We were down in Puerto Vallarta, and it was delightful. So happy to be back, though, with this warm spring-like weather we're having here. And Susan's here, Steve, I should add, because she has just become the chief sheriff of ethics enforcement in Hennepin County. She's blushing now, so I have some color in her cheeks again. Seriously, Susan was appointed in, February?
Yes.
As the chair of the Hennepin County Ethics Board by the Minnesota Supreme Court. So congrats to Susan.
Yes, and congrats.
Thank you.
You have served, Susan, on the ethics enforcement disciplinary level of the county for a number of years.
6 years, in fact. Took a break, and now I'll be back as chair. So it's an exciting time, that's to say the least.
And, of course, in addition to being a co-host with me on the show here, Susan is a director of the law firm of Moss & Barnett. So thanks, Susan, for joining us. Also in studio with us, Steve, are our guests, our featured guests, who are, first of all, Judith Rush. Welcome, Judith.
Thanks, Tom.
Judith is a lawyer in private practice in downtown St. Paul who has her own law firm. And Judith practices in the areas of family law and professional ethics, defending lawyers, I gather, on ethics matters and advising them, as well as dealing with other facets of general private practice of law. And we also have Martin Cole. Martin, welcome.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for inviting us.
You bet. Marty is the director of the Office of Lawyers Professional Responsibility, and Judith is the chair of the Lawyers Professional Responsibility Board. So these are tongue twisters that we're going to have to wrestle to the ground here and maybe just refer to the board as the Board of Professional Responsibility and Marty as the director of the Office of Lawyers Responsibility. And if I might just perhaps summarize, as I understand it, the board is responsible for the general overview and of the enforcement of professional ethics in the state of Minnesota for lawyers, and Marty, as the director of the office, is responsible for actually imposing discipline. Is that a fair take, Judith?
Yes, it is. The board is a volunteer group that oversees the Office of Lawyers Professional Responsibility and also has a function in the actual discipline of lawyers in Minnesota.
Okay, and you report to whom, though? You're established by the Supreme Court?
Yes, and we report directly to the Supreme Court.
And you chair a board of how many folks, Judith?
We have 23 members, which includes both lawyers and non-lawyers, 14 lawyers and 9 non-lawyers.
You know, I've learned so much getting ready for this show, and I really shouldn't admit that, except that fortunately I haven't had to be involved very often with, or at all, with the board that enforces lawyers' discipline.
That's because I keep my eye on you.
And I need that. Thank you. The answer, though, is the questions that I've developed here as we've prepared for this really reflect my ignorance of so much of what happens at this very important aspect of the practice of law in Minnesota, which is governed overall, Marty, by the Minnesota Supreme Court.
That's correct. I mean, the Supreme Court has the ultimate authority to regulate the practice of law and the lawyers of this state, and they have adopted rules that lawyers are required to follow and then have also established a disciplinary system that receives complaints and prosecutes lawyers where appropriate. And actually, we spend as much of our time helping lawyers as we do prosecuting them. So.
And this is a little bit unique in terms of professional licensing and setting the rules of conduct, because most professions are regulated by virtue of state statutes, which are adopted by the legislature and ruled then through state agencies.
That's correct, but the law is considered a self-regulating profession. But as I said, basically that's because the court, the judicial branch, has the inherent authority to regulate everything concerning the practice of law.
One of the things I learned, Judith, that really I was pleased to learn, in fact, was the extensive involvement of lay people, non-lawyers, in this whole process?
There are public members at every level of the system. We have volunteers at the local district ethics committee. Susan is the chair of one of those district ethics committees. 20% of those members have to be from the public, that is, non-lawyers. And we, as I said, we have 9 members of the board who are non-lawyers. Of our 5-member executive committee, 2 of them are not lawyers.
You know, I think, Tom, that point about having people from the community on the committee is really critical. I think it adds to the credibility. It's not just lawyers judging lawyers or monitoring lawyers. And I'm always amazed at the dedication those folks have. We meet at 7:30 in the morning, and they slog down town in the midst of winter, and their dedication to investigating and to helping is really remarkable. And I think we're very blessed in our community to have those folks that are willing to come forward and help like that.
And they bring a real common sense approach to the lawyer discipline system. I think they help keep the rest of us on our toes when we are judging each other.
Is there a website where people can visit if they are interested in volunteering for this service?
The office and the board have a combined website. It's at mincourts.gov/LPRB. And there's a wealth of information on there. As far as actually the volunteering aspect, they probably would be better contacting the local district ethics committee or the bar association in their local area as far as volunteering goes, rather than being able to do that directly through our website.
It's interesting that they actually get involved in the nitty-gritty of considering specific complaints against lawyers and really bringing, as you say, Marty, this common sense layperson perspective to the process. And Judith, do you also serve in getting down into the actual discipline of lawyers in a particular case?
I don't personally. As chair, I'm not involved in any of the adjudicatory matters, but the board itself is divided into panels of 3. There's a non-lawyer member on each panel, and the panel hears cases. They determine probable cause. They take appeals in cases where discipline has been meted out, and either the person complaining about the lawyer or the lawyer appeals that. We are involved at that level. We're also involved at a policy level. So although our rules are the Minnesota Rules of Professional Conduct, we're able to determine policy, give opinions, and regulate the lawyers in that manner as well.
Now, the baseline for all of this, of course, are the Rules of Professional Conduct for lawyers themselves. Who sets those, Judith?
Those are promulgated by the Minnesota Supreme Court. But when we see, whether it's the Office of Lawyers Professional Responsibility or the board, sees a need to make some changes or clarify, we do play an important role in recommending changes to the rules, which are then submitted to the Supreme Court.
Marty, you've been doing this for how many years now?
25.
I imagine you've seen some real changes in not only the practice of law, but also the rules used to govern the practice of law.
Sure, they've been amended several times and, in fact, completely revised on 2 different occasions following committees. With that, though, the basic ethical thou shalt not lie, cheat, steal, I mean, those things are always going to be in the rules and appropriately so.
What's the biggest change that you've seen in terms of professional ethics or what you do, I should say, over the last 25 years?
Well, one of the changes that has happened is the willingness to sort of enter into stipulations for probation to help lawyers who have chemical or mental health issues, and the ability to repay the victims in some cases, which is something that the Minnesota Client Security Fund, kind of a sister organization, is involved in. So there's been a lot of steps, I think, taken to aid both lawyers who have problems, but also the victims in certain cases.
Well, very good. We'll be circling back to both of those points here later in our show as we discuss lawyers' professional responsibility in Minnesota. And as we continue in our discussion then, let me ask, really, what are we talking about in terms of lawyers who run afoul of the rules? Is it a big number, a small number? How could we approach that?
It's really a very small number. I mean, there are about 20,000 practicing lawyers in the state of Minnesota, and we receive 1,200, 1,300 complaints a year. And if 50 lawyers are publicly disciplined maybe in a given year and another 150 are privately disciplined by our office. So, you know, we're talking about a very small percentage of the lawyers who get in trouble. Overwhelmingly, the majority of the lawyers are ethical and quality practitioners.
All right, we have more coming up on the program. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday at noon. Lawyers' professional responsibility in the spotlight today. We have a whole lot more coming up. But, Tom, before we go to the break, we've got our question of the week.
Indeed, Steve. So the drum roll, please, and thank you. But apropos our topic, we often hear jokes, Steve, about lawyers being ambulance chasers. So the question of the week is true or false. Lawyers may call up a stranger and offer or solicit legal representation to someone they've never worked with before, just like any other business. True or false?
That is true or false. You can text the studio, 81807. That's 81807. We'll pay that off at the end of the program. By the way, our text service at 81807. News Radio 830 WCCO. We have got much more coming up on the program. Stick around. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Don't make a federal case out of it. Did you know Minnesota has federal courts located in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, and Fergus Falls?
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Welcome back. Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. Available online at moss-barnett.com. The program comes your way each and every Saturday at noon. Tom Schroyer, Susan Rode in studio today. Lawyers' professional responsibility in the spotlight, Tom. Susan?
You know, Steve, I think last week I mentioned that, boy, when you get a letter from the board, it is like your heart stops. It's tough being on the ethics committee because you get a lot more letters, and so I have a lot more heart-stopping moments. And lawyers take these complaints very, very seriously. But I'd like to turn to the other direction for a minute and look at the consumer, the client. And, Judith, when a client has a complaint about a lawyer, how can they go about making that complaint?
Well, the easiest way now is to get onto the Lawyers Board website where they can download a complaint form, and they fill it out and send it in. Very soon, the website will also be modified so that people can actually file a complaint via the website. Right now, it needs to be downloaded, filled out, and sent the old-fashioned way in the mail. But as soon as that complaint is received, the office will look at it and determine whether, based on the complaint, the facts tend to show that there might be a violation of the rules. And from there, they decide how it's going to be investigated. The majority of the complaints get sent to the District Ethics Committee. And again, that's the there's 21 District Ethics Committees around the state that have both the public and the lawyer members on there. And their primary function is to investigate the facts of the complaint and determine whether they believe a rule has been violated. And when a lawyer violates one of those rules, it's called misconduct, and they could be disciplined.
And those boards in all the districts are, or those committees are also volunteer lawyers, volunteer lay people within that committee who many times actually do the investigating and make a recommendation back to the board then, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, we have a great tradition of with volunteerism as well as with the non-lawyer use in Minnesota. A lot of states don't use volunteers or don't use non-lawyers very extensively, and hopefully it's just that we have better volunteers and better non-lawyer participants here in Minnesota, but the system has always worked very well for us here.
And if the complaint doesn't go to the district, why might a complaint not go to the district?
Well, you know, something, if there's been criminal charges brought against a lawyer, something, some very serious allegations that need to be really jumped on real quickly by our office, certain sorts of maybe particularly sensitive type of allegations, which you know, if not true, would be particularly embarrassing to the lawyer. Those kind of reasons maybe will cause us to keep the complaint, but we say in-house and investigate it directly with one of our staff lawyers. But the majority of the complaints do go to the district committee, such as the one you chair, and are investigated by our volunteers.
You know, heaven forbid someone is found to have committed misconduct. What happens then?
Well, when the committee's report comes back to our office, and you have to keep in mind that the overwhelming majority of the complaints end up being dismissed with a finding that no discipline is warranted for a host of reasons, either because it's just not proven to be true or maybe the conduct wasn't as serious as it may have appeared or appeared to the complainant. But in those instances where rule violations have been found, we can impose private discipline on a lawyer. It's called an admonition, or we can agree to a form of probation if there's some reason that we can work with the lawyer to avoid public discipline. Or in serious matters, then we would file charges of unprofessional conduct, which are heard by one of those panels of the board that Judy alluded to, and ultimately can go all the way up to the Supreme Court for trial, briefing, oral argument, a full due process rights that the lawyer has before the Supreme Court might publicly discipline them.
And if the Supreme Court disciplines, it could be losing your license, correct?
Certainly. A small number of lawyers every year are disbarred or suspended. 5 to 10 lawyers are disbarred in most years, and probably another 20 to 25 are suspended for some period of time. But again, that's still a very small number of the lawyers in the state.
So fair to say that the Minnesota Bar is very high quality and respectful of the rules of professional responsibility. Do you agree with that, Judith?
Absolutely.
And I know that your office, both of you, do a lot of outreach every year to educate lawyers about what the rules are and how to make sure that that lawyers who are in practice are compliant.
That's correct. The lawyers in our office, for example, you know, we participate in what's called continuing legal education seminars that all lawyers have to take on an annual basis. And our lawyers speak at anywhere from 75 to 80 seminars a year. One or two a week, somebody is out speaking at a seminar or participating in things such as this.
All right, we have more on the way. Lawyers, professional responsibility in the spotlight today. Judith Rush, Martin Cole, Susan Rode, Tom Schroyer, all in studio today. If you have a question, feel free to call the program, 651-989-9226. Toll free, 1-866-989-9226. You can text the studio as well at 81807. That's 818-07. We have the news and the weather and then more Minnesota law coming up. News Radio 830 WCCO. Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com each and every Saturday at noon. Thanks so much for joining us. Judith Rush, Martin Cole, Susan Rode, Tom Schroyer in studio today. Lawyers, professional responsibility. Phone number on the program, 651-989-9226. Toll free, 1-866-989-9226. Let's go to the phone lines and bring in Steve. Steve, you're on the air. Hello.
Thank you. Convicted felons can become attorneys in this state, and I'm wondering why that is. I'll hang up.
Well, I guess I'll take that. The Board of Law Examiners actually is the one who deals with admissions, not our office directly. But as to the why, they would certainly be looked at and investigated as to the circumstances of their matter. And if the Board of Law Examiners determined that either the level of the matter that that led to the felony conviction of this person or the rehabilitation thereafter allows the person to be trustworthy enough to practice law, they'll make that recommendation to the Supreme Court. But that said, I suspect that anybody who is a convicted felon, again, while technically able to get admitted, would probably have an uphill battle to convincing the court that they should be allowed to practice.
And in fact, there is a fairly thorough criminal check, I think, when you apply to the Board of Law Examiners. So you are expected to disclose, but I think there's also checks done in some instances, too.
Oh, absolutely.
So, You know, Judith, I wanted to turn back for just a minute to talking about the complainant, because I think this is a pretty overwhelming thing for some of our community members to make a complaint against a lawyer, and they worry about, are they going to be heard? Do they need a lawyer going through the process? If I'm a community member and I file a complaint against my lawyer, do I have any say in it after that? Does anyone talk to me or contact me, or what happens?
Once the investigator starts looking at the complaint, they'll initially look at the complaint, and it is taken very seriously. They will sometimes call the complainant right away or send a letter requesting clarification, for example, if the facts aren't quite clear or if there's some other possible issues that are raised. Otherwise, if there aren't any questions, what happens is that complaint is sent to the lawyer. The lawyer has an opportunity to respond in writing, and the complainant, if they're the client of the lawyer, will get a copy of the lawyer's response and have an opportunity to respond. Now, if the complainant happens to be, for example, a party on the other side of a case from the lawyer, they won't automatically get a copy of the lawyer's response, but they will still have an opportunity in discussions with the investigator to respond to the substance of the facts that are brought in on the other side. Once the matter is fully investigated and a determination is made by the office as to the discipline, first of all, whether there's a violation, and secondly, what sort of discipline should be imposed, the complainant is notified of that, and they have an opportunity to object to that or provide additional information. If it's a situation of serious misconduct where there's going to be a full trial, the complainants are allowed to testify if that's what they want to do. To answer your question about whether they need a lawyer to bring a complaint, absolutely not. This is set up so that anyone can complain against a lawyer, and whether it's a public member or a lawyer complaining about another lawyer, lawyers are actually required to file a complaint where they see misconduct by another lawyer, or whether it's filed by a judge, the complainant has an opportunity to be involved basically from the beginning until the end of the disciplinary process.
And in fact, investigators are pretty diligent, I think, are they not, Martin, about even if a complaint is filed and it isn't very articulate, it doesn't cite to rules, and the complainant just feels like they didn't get treated right or something was wrong. Can you handle even that kind of complaint?
If the complaint really is very vague and difficult to understand, we will write back to the complainant and try to get clarification. But certainly there are some things that are complained about that just are not violations of the rules of professional conduct. If a lawyer is rude to a client or rude to the other side in some sort of kind of minor way, certainly that's not something we're going to be investigating on that level. But most of the time, the complainant will be contacted. They will be given that opportunity to explain further. And to kind of supplement what Judy said, it should be made clear, too, that there is no cost for filing a complaint. It's free and can be done. But we do expect the person to put their name on it. We prefer not to have anonymous complaints.
Now, how is the process funded? If you can file a complaint for free, this sounds like it is an involved process. There are a lot of people involved. There's a lot of time involved. And last time I checked, that's an important part of what lawyers do, keep track of their time.
The system is funded through lawyer registration fees. So lawyers essentially pay for the discipline system. And I think we keep the cost down by having the volunteer component that we do have. But it is a system that costs a substantial amount of money, but lawyers pay for that.
Marty, let me turn to more specific items and ask you flat out, what are the most common complaints against lawyers in Minnesota?
Well, certainly the most common complaints are either lack of diligence or some sort of lack of communication, and people can be unhappy about the fees they have to pay for lawyers, and fair enough, it's expensive to hire a lawyer, and as a result, they're going to be concerned about the performance of their lawyer, but a lack of diligence, lack of communication are the most common. And you know, from the lawyer's perspective versus the client's perspective, that can be very different. I try to tell people to remember on the lawyer's side to have some empathy that while they may have hundreds of clients that they have to sort of divide their attention between, a client with a personal injury or workers' compensation matter, maybe a marital dissolution, that case is the biggest thing going on in their life, and they're going to be expecting their lawyer to be very responsive to their needs, especially in today's electronic world. So lawyers have to be kind of sympathetic and understanding of their clients' concerns and try to keep active communication with them.
Judith, did you have something to add on that? Or?
Well, I just wanted to clarify what diligence in communication meant, because, of course, we're in the system and we know the rules that relate to these things. But what it means is lawyers are required to work hard for their clients, get things done on a, basically work on their clients' cases and let them know what's going on. And so those two rules that happen to be the most frequent violations are two of the most important rules that we have in the practice of law, because if we're not working hard for our clients and letting them know what's going on, we're not doing our jobs.
And so would you say that those kinds of complaints generally lead to outcomes of a private reprimand, maybe some probation or supervision, as opposed to something more public and or formal?
Certainly, unless the lawyer is someone that we call sort of a frequent flyer in the disciplinary system. If they generate a lot of valid complaints, they've neglected many files or failed to communicate with many clients, it can certainly build its way up to being publicly disciplined for that. But in general, an isolated instance of lack of diligence will be dealt with privately by our office.
How many complaints are thrown out because they just go along the lines of, this attorney didn't get satisfactory results, I didn't win my case, I'm going to file a complaint? How do you sort that out? I'm sure you get those.
Well, the complaints are screened every day by an attorney in our office as they come in, and really about 40% of the complaints kind of fall into some of those categories you were talking about, and those are dismissed usually without much, if any, investigation. But if they do allege a valid violation of the rules, we will investigate them.
Now, sadly, in at least the recent weeks and months, we've had a number of high-profile charges, issues raised about lawyers, not necessarily for their conduct as lawyers, but for episodes they've had running afoul of the law outside of the practice of law. Does that rise to the level of professional discipline, Judith?
It may. If a lawyer in their outside activities engages in conduct that raises a substantial question about their honesty, trustworthiness, fitness as lawyers, it is a matter that the Office of Professional Responsibility will look into. Most of the complaints that come in are complaints made by, as I said, by clients or opposing lawyers or judges. But the office does have the ability to, for example, in a high-profile case, to open a file against a lawyer so long as the office gets the permission of the board to do that. So the Office of Professional Responsibility can't just start going against a lawyer because they're concerned about some outside conduct, but in working with the board, a complaint can be brought in that manner.
All right. We have more coming up. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, Saturdays at noon. Today, lawyers' professional responsibility in the spotlight. Judith Rush, Martin Cole, Susan Rode, Tom Schroyer in studio today. If you have a question, feel free to call the program, 651-989-9226, toll-free 1-866-989-9226. And don't forget, before the end of the program, we'll pay off that question of the week as well.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Moss and Barnett, excellence in the community. Did you know every year, Moss & Barnett awards the Paul Van Valkenburg Award for Distinguished Community Service to one of its employees? Past winners include Tom Keller, Chuck Parsons, Connie Schofield, Adrian Summerfield, Kevin Bush, and Cheryl Riggs.
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss & Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
One segment to go. Tom Schroer, Susan Rode, co-hosting today, Judith Rush and Martin Cole.
Steve, thanks. We want to, again, thank Judith Rush, the chair of the Lawyers Professional Responsibility Board in Minnesota, and Martin Cole, the director of the Office of Lawyers Professional Responsibility, for being with us here today to talk about the rules governing professionalism for lawyers in Minnesota and the disciplinary system. And as we head into this final segment, Marty and Judith, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the transparency of the system. There's a lot of information available about attorneys online, and in particular, they can go to the website we talked about, which we will link up on our Moss & Barnett website, which is mincourt.org/lprb. Judith, what would you say is the publicly available information that folks might be interested in finding out?
Well, if they go to the Lawyers Board website, they'll get all kinds of information about not just filing a complaint, but the rules that govern lawyers. Those are all up there. And there are also links to the Minnesota Supreme Court site, which will tell if they go there, they can put in an attorney's name and find out whether they've ever been disciplined. And they can find out whether they maintain malpractice insurance. They can find out when they were admitted to the bar.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Do you have to maintain malpractice insurance to be an attorney in Minnesota?
No, you don't.
I think a lot of people are shocked to hear that, at least, that I've been told that in my experience. Martin, what is the rule for, or what's the reason for not requiring lawyers to have malpractice insurance?
Well, it's certainly a kind of a debatable question. There are a lot of people who think lawyers should be required to, and in only actually in one state, though, Oregon, and I think all the Canadian provinces, lawyers are required to have malpractice insurance. But as to the exact why, you sort of hear that sometimes, you know, if a lawyer is a good lawyer, they shouldn't need malpractice insurance. And I think that's maybe a little overly optimistic in today's society. But it's just basically been a policy decision, and certainly involved probably with the cost of that insurance. But in my experience, certainly most quality lawyers will carry malpractice insurance just on the off chance that they make a mistake.
And so if somebody looks at the website, Marty, would they find out that a lawyer for sure has malpractice insurance at the given moment when the inquiry is being made, or is it only at the time when the lawyer renews his or her professional license?
Well, it has to be listed every year as part of your annual registration statement. So at least as of that date, they can determine if the lawyer had malpractice insurance and if they intended to maintain it for the following year.
If somebody wants to know what rules govern attorneys, are those rules also available online?
Yes, they are. They're on the Lawyers Board website.
And, Marty, I know you publish extensively articles for attorneys about how to avoid getting into trouble with the disciplinary system. Are those articles available to members of the public?
Yes. All of the I write a monthly column for the Bar Association publication, and our lawyers write articles for, it's called Minnesota Lawyer. It's a weekly publication, and those are all reprinted on the website.
Steve, I think we've had a terrific show, and I really want to again thank Judith Rush and Martin Cole for joining Susan Rode and me in studio here to talk about professional licensing and discipline. And I think we ought to answer the question.
Yes, the question of the week.
Indeed, and of course, all Minnesota awaits the answer to this, and maybe I'll put it to Marty Cole to answer. Are lawyers allowed to be ambulance chasers in Minnesota?
That is false. They cannot just call up a stranger and offer legal services like any other annoying telephone business, perhaps. In-person telephone contact with a person is prohibited unless it's a former client, a family member, a close personal friend, that type of thing. But you can send in writing pretty much anything to a possible client, as long as it's sent in writing, and in certain instances, even it has to say advertising material on the envelope. But you can't cold call people and offer legal services.
So we have a bit of a Sid Hartman exception to ambulance chasing in Minnesota.
That's what I call it. The close personal relationship is the Sid Hartman exception.
All right, very good. Judith Rush, Martin Cole, Susan Rode, Tom Schroyer, Minnesota Law, Lawyers Professional Responsibility in the spotlight today. 1 week from today, Tom, what have we got?
We have a topic that I think is going to be very interesting to our listeners. It's the power of eminent domain. When can the government compel a private landowner to sell their property, and for what purpose? It's going to be a fascinating show with our Moss & Burnett shareholder, Paul Zisla.
All right, very good. That is next week, Minnesota Law, each and every Saturday at noon, presented by Moss & Burnett, available online at moss-burnett.com. Here on News Radio 830 WCCO.